Does anyone have one verse from the Brahma Samhita you want to go over today? Lali, what do you think? Oh, but we can't. The 64 artistic activities of the gopis? That's long.
Can we read the text 31?
Okay, 31. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. So, Alola Chandrakala Sad Banamalya Vangshi Ratnangadang Pranaya Keli Kalavilasam Shamang Tribhanga Lalitang Niyatak Prikasham Govindam Adi Purushang Tamahang Pajami. Alola swinging Chandrika with the moon locket, Lasat beautified, Vanamalya, a garland of flowers. Actually, forest flowers, right? Vana. Vangshi, flute. Or I guess Vanamalya, a flower, a forest necklace, right? Forest. Anyway, garland of flowers. Vangshi, flute, Ratna Angadam, adorned with jeweled ornaments, Pranaya, of love, Keli Kala, in pastimes, Vilasam, who always revels, Shamang, Shamasundara, Tribhanga, bending in three places, Lalitam, graceful, Niyata, eternally, Prakashang, manifest, Govindam, Govinda, Adipurusham, the original person, Tam, him, aham, I, Pajami, worship. Translation, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers, beautified with the moon locket, whose two hands are adorned with the flute and jeweled ornaments, who always revels in pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shamasundara is eternally manifest. Purport, in the shloka beginning with Chintamani Prakara, the transcendental region, and the spiritual names of Govinda, in the shloka beginning with Venum Quanantam, the eternal beautiful form of Govinda, and in this shloka, the amorous pastimes of Govinda, the embodiment of his 64 excellences, have been described. All the spiritual affairs that come within the scope of description in the narration of the ecstatic mellow quality rasa are included in the spiritual amorous sports of Govinda. So these first three verses of the prayers that Lord Brahma starts to recite after he becomes enlightened by recollection of the Gayatri are being described in this purport. The first verse describes the transcendental place, region, and spiritual names of Govinda. The second verse, which is verse number 30, describes the eternal beautiful form of Govinda. And then this verse describes the amorous pastimes of Govinda. Let's see. Vilasam, Keli Kala Vilasam. Pranaya Keli Kala Vilasam. Ratnangadam, his jeweled ornaments, is his flute. Vangshi Ratnangadam. Pranaya Keli Kala Vilasam. Who always revels in pastimes of love. The moon locket, Vaishasika taught me, is actually a kind of decoration of a way when you make a garland, then the little part in the bottom of the garland that has a certain combination of different colored flowers, and it's called a moon locket. I don't know exactly how to make it, but I always wondered, I always heard this verse, and I thought, well, it's beautified with a moon locket, but it's actually a name of part of a garland, the way of a garland may be made with a certain decorative bottom part. You can see it a lot of times in the garlands Krishna is wearing, that there'll be, you know, different colors right at the bottom. So, anyone have any questions or realizations or discussion about this verse? All the spiritual affairs that come within the scope of description in the narration of the ecstatic mellow quality are included in the spiritual amorous sports of Govinda. Right, Bali Mardan first.
Which is, there is actually one pastimes pertaining to this one, is which is unknown to us also, when Krishna actually asked gopis that, can you give me your pearls, whatever you are holding, the jewels, so that I can decorate my cow, calf, Hansi is primarily his favorite age, and I will decorate to, then they laughed, like that. And after that, Krishna requested, no, it just at least give for Hansi at least, you know how I, it is dear to me and all. Then they again laughed, he likely, you are likely cheating or something. You don't have pulse yourself and you are asking for your, you know, calf. Then Krishna, out of revenge, he caught the pulse from his mother and he basically implanted in Vrindavan soil. And there is a pulse coming out from the tree. And then he decorates all of his calves. Then gopis and Radharani, they are envious. They said, why don't we also do like that? And they started making the pulse. And from their thorns coming out. So they are very worried that how come it is coming like it. And, you know, it's a big pastimes like that. So it is said that they always, Shyam Sundar, you know, he's giving his amorous pastimes with all 64 excellence qualities in Vrindavan with the gopis, transcendental, all humorous pastimes.
There. Yes, he has so many wonderful pastimes. That pastime has been described nicely in English in a book by Shivaram Swami called Krishna Sangati. And he tells that story. I don't know, is it from the Gopal Champu or?
We just saw from the Krishna cartoon, which is published by ISKCON Bangalore. Uh-huh. The new cartoon, the Krishna, uh-huh. Little Krishna.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, from there I think I got this story.
Oh, okay.
It was so funny.
If you see that book, it's called Krishna Sangati, and the last chapter in that book tells that whole story very nicely. Nice. Ramananda Sakka Prabhu?
There is another verse which points out the 64 artistic qualities of Krishna's consort, that is Srimati Radharani. But this verse is also talking about the embodiment of his 64 excellences. What is the 64? What is it? In the shloka beginning with Venum Kvanantam, the eternal beautiful form of Govinda, and in this sloka, the amorous pastimes of Govinda, the embodiment of his 64 excellences. So the 64 excellences here is referring to the pastimes of Govinda.
There's in the Nectar of Devotion, the 64 excellences of Krishna are described. I think it's more than one chapter even. Each excellence, each quality is described, and then there's examples given. So the 64, also that's where we get the percentages, like, you know, the last four qualities are not possessed by any of the Narayan expansion like that. So the then I think there's five other qualities that are not possessed by, that are possessed by Vishnu, but not by Brahma and Shiva. And then the other ones, or I may not be getting that right, but it's in the Nectar of Devotion. So there's 64. The four qualities that are unique to Krishna are his special loving pastimes, his playing the flute, his being surrounded by especially loving devotees, and his special bodily physical beauty. A form of beauty. So those are Krishna's special attributes. But I don't remember exactly how it's divided between. I know that there are some qualities that Shiva may display that Jivas won't usually display. And then there are some qualities that Vishnu has that even Shiva doesn't have. Like that. I think.
It is there also that the Brahma can even maximize his percentage, 78% of that 50 points.
Yeah.
He even cannot attain 100% of that. And yeah. Shiva is more, but he is likely little more, five qualities more than Brahma. And then Vishnu is 60 qualities. And then Rama is 62 and a half qualities.
Oh, 62 and a half. I never heard that one. Rama, Lord Rama.
I think the Leela Madhurji or something, he has, he possesses like the, he doesn't exhibit fully just like Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But he also does the Leela, but not in full extent.
He's one
many other in Balda Leela and all, not exactly like Krishna. He cannot be like Mahatma Chow.
Krishna's got certain rasas that are sweeter, that are displayed. One time I was talking to Bhakti Charu Swami, and I was saying that he was describing how the Vatsalya Rasa is then manifest with this particular sweetness in Krishna Leela and not in the Rama Leela. So then I asked him, I said, but in Ram Charitamanas by Tulsidas, there's this song about little Ram trying to carry the shoes. And Bhakti Charu Swami told me, Tulsidas is mixing things that are actually Krishna's Leela. He's mixing it into Rama's Leela. You know, he came after Lord Chaitanya, and this isn't it. You won't find this in Valmiki Ramayana, but it's like being mixed by this devotee poet, you know, that has this. It's actually not part of Rama's pastimes, actually. The relationship of Rama and Dasharatha is, you know, very characterized with great chivalry. You know how his, you know, his this is Rama's pastimes are very much imbued with the dependent rasa. You know, there's five major rasas, and then there's seven. There's five primary rasas, and there's seven secondary rasas. So then the secondary rasa of chivalry is very prominent, and the rasas of servitude and friendship are prominent in Rama Leela, but not so much the Madhurya rasa and the conjugal rasa. Even the Sita and Rama, it's very much, their religious, you know, feelings of proper duty and proper, you know, but it's not this this wild love that you see in Krishna's Leela. More like some like Krishna and the queens, less like Krishna and the cowherds, gopis. So yeah, that's nectar of devotion. Somebody, if you have a calculator and you could say 64 divided by, or rather 50 divided by 64, how many percent is that, and see if it matches up exactly with all these. Is it close to 78%? Yeah. So that's where it comes from, 78%. 50 qualities that are possessed by jivas, that can be exhibited by jivas.
But in less degree,
not fully, the way Krishna can exhibit them fully. But in jivas may exhibit them in less degree, like Lord Brahma, you know, may exhibit them, all these 50 qualities more, you know. But it only is 78% of what the qualities that Krishna actually. This is that. So that's described in Nectar of Devotion.
Yeah, because also in.
In the Mahabharata, when I was reading it, like in Dwaraka, Krishna's doorkeeper, one time he was so exhausted because he was saying, Brahma, can you stay for 5 minutes? Lord Shiva, please stay. Indra, you stay, and other demigods, he said, better go away. because Krishna is really busy now. So many big personalities are coming and meeting him, and I am tired also. I need rest, so you guys better go home. So he was likely trying to explain that the powerful personality of Krishna, how he is accessible in Vrindavan and Braj, easily, but in Dwarka, people have to wait in the line and getting his darshan. Just like kingly.
Haribo. All right, so we'll move on. Today we'll sing a different song, but first we'll do the Namashtakam at the blue tab. So we'll read the translations together. Oh, Hare Krishna. What's going on? Where are you going?
He goes skating or something.
Skating. Yeah. That's Balaram?
Balaram, yeah. 9 o'clock.
Ah, okay. Hare Krishna. Nikhila Shruti Mauli Ratnamala. Duty Nirajita Pada Pankajanta. Ai Mukta Kulai Rupasyamanam. Paritas Twang Harinama Sangshrayami. Together. O Harinama, the tips of the toes of your lotus feet are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance emanating from the string of gems known as the Upanishads, crown jewels of all the Vedas. You are eternally adored by liberated souls like Narada and Shukadeva. O Harinama, I take complete shelter of you. Jaya Nama Dheya Muni Brinda Gaya He. Jana Ranjanaya Param Akshara Krite. Twamanada Radha Pimana Gudiritang. Nikhilo Gratapa Pataling Vilumpasi. O Harinama, all glories to you. Sung by all the sages, you are the supreme combination of syllables, and you bring transcendental bliss to everyone. If a person utters you but once, even disrespectfully, still you relieve his many extreme sufferings. Yad abhaso pyudyan kabalita pavadvanta vipavo. Yad drishang tatvandhanam api dishati bhakti pranayanim. Janastasyo datang jagati bhagavan nama taranne. Kriti te nirvaktum ka iha mahimanang prabhavati. O son of the holy name, even a dim glimmer of your splendor swallows the powerful darkness of materialistic life and gives those who are blind to the truth the vision to follow the path of pure devotional service. Who in this world, even if learned and pious, can fully describe your transcendental glory? Yad brahma sakshat kriti nishtayapi. Vina shamayati vina nabhogahi. Apaiti namas puranena tatte. Prarabdha karmeti virauti vedaha. O holy name, the Vedas declare that meditation on the impersonal Brahman cannot bring freedom from karmic reactions, that they must be enjoyed or suffered, but that when you manifest in one's consciousness, all karma at once disappears. Aghadamana Yashodanandana Nandasuno. Kamala Nayana Gopi Chandra Vrindavanendraha. Pranata Karuna Krishna Vityaneka Swarupe. Twayi Mamarati Ruchayar Vartatang Namadheya. O holy name, you have many forms such as Aghadamana, crusher of Akasura, Yashodanandana, darling child of Yashoda, Nandasuno, son of Nanda, Kamalanayana, lotus-eyed one, Gopi Chandra, moon of the gopis, Vrindavanendra, king of Vrindavana, Pranata Karuna, he who is merciful to the surrendered souls, and Krishna. I pray that my love for you in your many forms may greatly increase. Vachyang Vachakam Ityudeti Bhavato Nama Swarupa Dvayang. Purvasmat param eva hanta karunang tatrapi jani mahe. Yastasmin vihita paradha nivahak prani samantad bhaved. Asyene damupasya sopi hi sadanandam buddhau majjati. O holy name, you manifest two forms, the supreme person you designate and the sound vibration that designates. We know that the second form is more merciful than the first, because even if a person offends your first form in many ways, you plunge him into an ocean of transcendental bliss if he serves your second form with his voice. Sudita shita janarti rashaye ramyachid ghana sukha swarupine nama gokula mahotsavayate krishna purna vapushe namo namaha. O holy name, you destroy the many sufferings of those who take shelter of you. You are the very form of concentrated spiritual bliss, a festival of happiness for Gokula, and the perfect and complete form of Lord Krishna. Again and again I bow to you. Narada vino jivana sudhormi niryasa madhuri pura tvang krishna nama kamang spura me rasane rasena sada. O enlivener of Narada's Veena, O flood of the waves of sweet nectar, O holy name of Lord Krishna, please forever manifest on my tongue with all your nectarian sweetness. Jai, Namashtika Ki Jai. Realizations, comments?
I just noticed that in this Namastakam, there are two places where it is said that the holy name destroys the sufferings who take shelter of the holy name. It was repeated twice.
In text 2 and in text 7, huh?
Text 7 and another text 2.
Also in text 4 it says all karma at once disappears.
Yeah, yes.
In text 6, it says you plunge people into an ocean of transcendental bliss. But yeah, it talks about relieving of the suffering, especially in text 2 and in text 7.
Mm-hmm.
Flood of the waves of sweet nectar.
But actually, it's very hard to say how the holy name is relieving the many extreme sufferings. Because if we see, you know, see that the opposite is really happening. Those who take shelter of the holy name, they seem to be plunged into the into the sufferings, externally at least. How does, because...
They may, like the Pandavas, for example, the Pandavas had to suffer so many things, but that's not every devotee. It's sometimes an example. Krishna shows that they take shelter of the holy name, though. When devotees experience reverses, they immediately take shelter of the holy name. Just like in Vrindavan, the devotees with Krishna in Vrindavan, you know, they had so many demons coming all the time, and forest fires, and Indra sent these clouds to come and destroy everybody, so many dangers. But the devotees, because they're devotees of Krishna, Krishna protects them, so they're not destroyed. They take shelter of Krishna, and immediately he protects them. They immediately think of Krishna, pray to Krishna, and he protects them. But nobody's really protected from suffering, like birth, death, old age, and disease. Even people who... because of the result of good karma, they have physical beauty, learning, wealth, born in a noble family, aristocratic family, they're famous, and all those kinds of things. They still get old, they still die, they still have mental illness, different problems. I saw that Jagarini was watching on television a interview with Oprah Winfrey interviewing J.K. Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter. It was an interesting interview, and this woman has become one of the wealthiest women in the world, one of the wealthiest people in the world. She was suffering from depression. Her mother died. She got involved in a short-lived bad marriage. And she had one child that she was a single mother with. She had been a secretary. She had no work. I guess she was a writer, but you know, didn't have an agent, didn't have anything, you know, going on in her writing career. Then all of a sudden now she's been catapulted to, you know, stardom and fame, writing these books, this series of books, which are the best sellers in the world. And there's a theme park now, and there's a series of movies and everything. It's like she has a whole empire of Harry Potter stuff that she created out of her mind. And, but yet, you know, she has, you know, suffered from depression. You know, a lot of writers, I think, that, you know, people, they're just solitary and they don't get involved in so much stuff. There's a danger of seeing the futility of the world. But I just thought that was interesting. Devotees, it's not that. Well, Rupa Goswami says that the holy name, all your karma at once disappears. You become a transcendental person. But externally, you know, if you're not pure, if you're not chanting the name perfectly, or if Krishna is using a devotee as an example, you know, I mean, for example, you know, Srila Prabhupada had some reverses. It was hard for him to get to the United States. He was asking people to give him money. Finally, Sumati Maharaji gave him passage, but you know, he's asking people. The Indian government gave him obstacles. You know, so many things. Then he got here, and at first, although there was no, you know, reasonable reason why he would think that he would be able to be successful, you know, from a material consideration, and he was getting no support, but he still persevered for about a year. Until he started to get some devotees, you know, Hayagriva and some other devotees started, you know, surrounding him and actually supporting. So, but the suffering is there. With the material body means, you know, material body means it's temporary, it's changing, it's going to have disease, it's going to have death, and you know, that's just the nature of. You know, the material body, but those who take shelter of Krishna and remember who they really are, they are operating on both levels. They're engaging their material body in devotional service and it becomes spiritualized, and the sufferings of that affect people, you know, materially, those sufferings, they don't bother them so much. But also they actually have awakened to great happiness on the spiritual level, that's eternal happiness. And that's the real, that's real happiness. All the other so-called happiness is not even really happiness. It's just like a drop of water in the desert. It doesn't satisfy. It's not really satisfying. It's like, it's not enough. It's not of the right kind. So the holy name, yes, it relieves all the sufferings. We can feel relief if we're in anxiety, if we're frightened. Just like 2 weeks ago, we went down to the Santa Cruz for book distribution. And I had the sign, free meditation lessons. You know, you were there, right? No, I weren't there. I had the sign, Bhakti Yoga, free meditation lessons, and sat out there and brought some japa beads with me. And it was actually quite busy. Before the other devotees came, I met one lady named Michelle, and she had just lost her job. She was in her early 60s, and she had moved to Santa Cruz because she always wanted to live there, but she was thinking, I'm running out of money, and it's going to be hard for me to find another job at this age, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and I'm in great anxiety. I've always been a spiritual person. I'm a Buddhist. She was really good. She was telling me, like, you know, I was talking to her a little bit about how there's really a distinction between the Supreme and the individual soul. And she said, yeah, I know that. She said that she was frustrated with her Buddhism. She had been involved in a version of Zen, Japanese Zen, called Nishrin Shoshu, the chant. So she was familiar with chanting. They chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. She was feeling like, you know, my friends and everything, they tell me when I'm suffering, they tell me, well, why have you, you know, brought this on yourself? Why have you created this world that in which you're suffering? And she resented that because they were the people who were causing her suffering. They had fired her. They created a job for her and had her move. Anyway, maybe I'm telling too much. I'm being broadcasted. If somebody's watching, I'm telling too much of her personal life. But I thought she was really interesting that I told her, you know, I talked to her about the fact that there is a soul. We were looking at Bhagavad Gita and stuff. And I said, of course, in Buddhism, there's this complicated doctrine of, you know, that there isn't a soul, that it's just an ego, and that itself is on the basis of desire, that it goes from life to life, from body to body, but it really ultimately, even that doesn't exist. And she said, yeah, I'm sick of that. I'm through with that. I believe in a soul, and I believe in God, and I believe I'm just a small soul, and there's really a God. And then we chanted a round of japa. And afterwards she said that she felt much relief from all her anxiety. She felt a lot lighter. And she was happy to have her Bhagavad Gita and her Krishna book. And she was going to go. And I didn't take her phone number or her contact information, which I should have. But I thought, oh, she's like a devotee waiting to happen. But people were chanting with me, to make a short story as long as I possibly can. People were chanting with me and they were saying that they felt better, that it made them feel relief. Even though they didn't know a lot about the philosophy or the, you know, or who Krishna is or his forms and pastimes and stuff, but just by sitting and focusing on his name and chanting, they were experiencing that they felt more peaceful, less anxiety. You know, take a time out from the activities of the world. One time I had the experience that I was in Florida. I had a broken taillight and I got a fix-it ticket. And then I moved to Maryland and I forgot about the ticket and I didn't fix it, and they sent some things about it, warning letters and things, to the temple in Miami, but they didn't know where to forward my mail to, or they didn't bother to forward it. So one, and I didn't go to the Maryland DMV and get a new driver's license. So I was in anxiety. I was in college and I had tests to do and term papers to write, and I was in my regular life, I was feeling all this anxiety. And I got pulled over for, you know, something, and then they checked my driver's license and said, oh, your license was suspended. You're driving with a suspended license. And they put handcuffs on me and took me right away to jail for overnight in the drunk tank with all the people coming in for fighting and being disorderly and stuff like that. But my experience was, it made me feel very peaceful somehow, strangely, that now before, when I was worried, how am I going to do all these things and it's so hard for me to do, now I didn't have to worry about that, because at least to myself I had an excuse. Like, I don't know why, but I felt like no matter what, I don't have my paper, I can't write my term paper. I guess other people might be worried about it. Now I can't write my term paper, now I'm really in trouble. But for me, I felt like it was like, you know, no matter how much worrying I did wouldn't help me. It was just clear, you know, I was being put aside in a situation where I was kind of stuck. So I had nothing to do but take shelter of Krishna. And I felt this strange relief and peace. Not that I'm recommending that people should be put in jail, but I think that's partly why jails work, or if they work. I don't know if they work, because usually you get all the criminals together and then they form into gangs and they plan what the crimes they're going to do when they get out and stuff like that. But the idea is that by, you know, putting a kid in a timeout or whatever, you know, you get detached from all the things that, you know, because our mind and our, you know, we're all involved in this karma and we're, you know, taking it to be the basis of our reality, that I've got to do this, and if I don't do that, I'll suffer, and if I do this, I'll be happy. And we're all absorbed in that stuff, and it's all a distraction from our real life of Krishna consciousness. And of course, we should learn to offer it all to Krishna, you know, karma yoga. But this chanting Hare Krishna, you have, this is your jail. You have 2 hours a day. You sit down and you chant Hare Krishna, and you don't, and you can't do anything else. You know, we should have, like Bhaktisiddhanta said, you have to beat your mind. You know, it would be great if we had, you know, like some policeman in our mind that would make us, you know, no, you can't do anything else now. You have to chant your rounds and you have to pay attention and you really have to do it. And once you do it regularly and you're not going to do anything else, it helps. Like living in a temple with other devotees, there's peer pressure, you know, that's what we're all doing every day, you know, and it helps that you can't think, well, I might do something else. But once you just convince your mind, you know, that's what we do in the morning. We chant japa every morning. Your mind stops, at first your mind is protesting. Well, maybe I should be doing something else. Come on, you could change your mind. But once you just say, no, there's no way, I'm not changing, then you can become peaceful and you can really take shelter of the holy name. And you stop, you know, once your mind stops fighting you and starts also going along. So, yes, it brings great relief from suffering because it reminds you who you really are and you're really transcendental. So the suffering is external, and it's external, and it's therefore, and it's temporary. So it's not all that significant because it's temporary. It's just pertaining to your temporary body. Now, does that mean that devotees suffer more than non-devotees, or if you become a devotee, you'll suffer more? No, it shouldn't mean that. You know, sometimes devotees, you know, lose their material ambition, and the non-devotees seem that they're making more money because they're really concerned about more money, but actually they're... a devotee is supposed to be able to do his duty anyway, you know, to continue doing his duty, whatever that duty is. It doesn't have to be all about making money. But the non-devotees, they waste so much time and energy, you know, pursuing other things, sometimes even sinful things. They spend a lot of time, you know, drinking and, you know, dating and going to football games and staying out all night with friends partying and stuff like that. So it's not like devotees... because they're chanting japa for 2 hours or they're going to the morning program, you know, the whole morning program with class and everything like that. It may take 5 or 6 hours every day. So you say, well, that 5 or 6 hours, or they could be using that, doing something else, and they would be suffering less. But actually, most people end up spending that 5 or 6 hours watching television and, you know, doing all kinds of other things that that devotees shouldn't be doing. I mean, if you try to burn the candle at both ends, you might find that you can't attend to your economic development and, you know, taking care of your family and everything. But Krishna's in control of everything, and he's very much affectionate to his devotees. So it's said, sometimes we read about how Sri Krishna sometimes takes everything away from a devotee, but even that's his mercy on a devotee, because he's protecting a devotee from becoming intoxicated by things and distracted from, you know, getting the real bliss, the real satisfaction of the holy name. But other devotees, you know, so many devotees in the history have been very wealthy kings and, you know, business people and other things, and they're able to live a peaceful life, but by being a devotee, they're able to properly... adjust and use everything in Krishna's service. You know, King Ambarish was a big king, you know. King Prataparudra was a big king, you know. Murari Gupta was a physician. We have all these examples of devotees in Lord Chaitanya's Leela. But the Paramahansas, you know, a lot of the devotees are sannyasis, and you know, there is an example for the rest of society, that someone who's conquered all that, who doesn't need it anymore, who's really, they're happy to just sleep outdoors, and they've conquered eating and sleeping, nidrahara viharakati vijito. So they eat when somebody gives them something to eat, otherwise they don't eat, you know, their stomach growls, and, you know, that's just my stomach, you know, because they have a real engagement, a real life somewhere else. But it's so nice to hear, for me, when we, because most religions, you know, you go to church or mosque or whatever, you're not going to hear about how, oh, if God is really merciful, he takes everything away from you. They don't, mostly they don't think like that, because most religion is, you know, telling you, do like this, do like that, be good, and you'll get a reward of some material reward, you know. I mean, even if you read the Bible, you know, Jesus is going around in the New Testament. I found it, I mean, it's great that, you know, when God does, or a divine person appears and he can do things that are miraculous, but Jesus is going around. You read the Gospels and he's going around and he's healing people that are sick and he's raising people from the dead and he's, you know, fixing everybody's material problems. But and he's also giving teachings on spiritual life, that we that our real life is in spiritual and not the material. You know, what profiteth a man who gains the world if he loses his soul? Many interesting teachings about spiritual things. But I always found it, why is he spending so much time, you know, performing these miracles and healing sick people and stuff like that? They're still going to, unless they become devotees, you know, they're just, now they're just a healed person, you know, and then they'll get sick later, you know. Or so you took this guy back from the dead, you know, but he's still going to die, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, but he's still going to die, you know. I mean, so what's the big, you know, his family was all lamenting, oh, he's died. But rather than come and teach people, well, yeah, you know, that's material life. There's death there. Anyway, I'm not criticizing the Bible. It's been around a long time. It's a famous book, and it's well received by the critics and everything. But this idea of religion that it will make you materially happy. It's like it should make you indifferent to material happiness. It should make you that when I'm materially happy, I use that for Krishna service, and when I'm materially unhappy, it will remind me that I don't belong here. I'm a fish out of water. I belong in the spiritual realm, and this is the material realms. This is not me. It's so hard for us. You know, the very first thing we tell people when we preach Krishna consciousness, you're not this body, you're an eternal spirit soul, and you're different from the body. But look at the changing bodies, you know, you're just passing through and stuff. We say that, but to actually realize that, you know, that these senses, when I think, you know, I'm hungry, I want a piece of pie, you know, it's not me, it's my material body, you know, telling me these things. To actually realize that, you know, that, you know, something happened, I'm feeling a sore throat or something like that, you know, that I have a sore throat. No, you don't have a sore throat. I'm in pain. No, it's not you're that in pain. These are your senses interacting with the sense objects. And it's going to happen. Even to great saints, they show externally that example of that they're like us. You know, very rarely do they actually fly up into the sky. You know, like Jesus was said to fly up in the sky and be assumed. You know, even Mary, his mother, was, you know, flew up into the sky by angels, took him up. And we read about it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, like Ajamil, he was protected from death by chanting the holy name. He was going to die and be taken to court of Yamaraj, and then he chanted the holy name even inadvertently, and then he didn't die at that time. The Vishnu Dutas said, no, you know, you can't take him. And then he went to Haridwar and he practiced bhakti yoga and became perfect. And then those same Vishnu Dutas came down again in a golden vimana, swan vimana, that was, you know, swan power, flying on these airplanes. And then they just, in that same body, he just got on and he flew back to Vaikuntha that way. But I don't remember if he left a body behind. You know, sometimes, you know, you just, they'll leave a body behind. But the great devotees, they, like Srila Prabhupada showed us that he went through a long period of illness from 1976, really, pretty much, even when he started preaching this Krishna consciousness movement, he already had a stroke, heart attack, he had ringing in his ears, he had swelling in his teeth, all these kind of things, different kind of edema in his legs and things like that. He was tireless anyway, going on translating these books and preaching. So his show, the example of externally, you know, it looks like they're suffering, but that's austerity, that for the sake of the suffering people of the world, the devotees tolerate some suffering. But the devotees don't, it's for the devotees, they realize this is just my body, this is just my senses interacting with the objects, this is the modes of material nature. When you read about the three modes, then Krishna says you can transcend the modes, and by engaging in full devotional service, and he says that you know, one who is transcendental to the modes, then he has this quality that he's not elated when you know, goodness, passion, or ignorance are prominent. Nor is he dejected. You know, it's not like I want this one, I don't want that one, and stuff like that. He becomes indifferent to that by being constantly engaged in devotional service. Maybe, can you get me the Gita? Arjuna asks him these questions. What is it like when you're transcendental to the modes, and how do you do it? Hare Krishna. Welcome. So the three modes are described, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and their different qualities, different, and how they bind. And then Arjuna inquires, by what symptoms is one known who is transcendental to those three modes? What is his behavior, and how does he transcend the modes of nature? And the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, replies, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear. So illumination is the mode of goodness, attachment is the mode of passion, and delusion is the mode of ignorance. But he doesn't hate them when they're present, or long for them when they disappear, who's unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. So I don't think this is verses 22 through 25. And then the answer to how he does that is the next verse. He says, one who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So we shouldn't think that the devotees, you know, who are fully dedicated and have become like Paramahansa sannyasis, that because they live very simply, or they may have, you know, no money and just wandering around and telling people about Krishna, we shouldn't think, oh, they've become miserable. Actually, they're really happy. You know, when you see them, such devotees are very, very happy. You might not know the kind of happiness because you're expecting them to be, you know, wearing a party hat, a sombrero, and, you know, drinking margaritas, and, you know, that's the example of happiness, you know, singing karaoke. But actually, for them, that seems like really miserable. And all the, you know, the mundane movies and plays and literature and stuff like that, people get all wrapped up in the, you know, the happiness. Will the hero get the girl, or will the heroine get the boy, or the right boy in the end, or this or that? And they're worrying about, will they be happy or not? For the, you know, great sages, they don't take any interest in that kind of literature, because the people, they can see that the characters are all in Maya, and they won't be happy. They really, at best, they get a little temporary material happiness, and then they struggle. So when the devotees externally appear to be suffering, even then they're even happy. And that's the lesson. When Kunti Devi prays like that, that I want these calamities to come again and again, because then we see you, Krishna. And when we see you, then we don't see any more material existence. So it's an unusual prayer. It's a very beautiful prayer, very profound. It's the opposite, Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the opposite of most religion. You know, Kaitava Dharma, they teach be good and then you'll be wealthy and you'll be peaceful and you'll have all the good things that, you know, to facilities for material enjoyment. But Srimad Bhagavatam says, we're not cheating anymore now. This is for the advanced, this is the advanced class. You know, it's important that you be good so that you get out of the modes of passion and ignorance, so you're a little bit able to actually perceive things as they are. But now for the advanced class, we're not going to cheat you anymore. We're not going to offer you rewards, you know. Not that the rewards aren't there. You know, the Vedas are correct. You know, if you perform the right rituals and you do them correctly, you can be elevated to heavenly planets, you know, if you want to. But you have to, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, each planet is a place of misery. And repeated birth and death take place. You have to return when your stock of pious activities is up. That's the result of material good karma, is you have to enjoy some material situation that's externally, apparently enjoyable, and then it's over with, and then you have to lose it again. You know? So that's not really happiness. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, ubayor api drishton tas tvanayos tatvadarshini. That which is real, it doesn't ever disappear. It's, you know, and that which is temporary, it doesn't endure. That which is not real, the material body, it doesn't endure. So real happiness is Krishna consciousness, and real distress is forgetfulness of Krishna. And so, the holy name does relieve all distress. But it relieves your extreme sufferings. Well, first of all, it destroys all the bad karmic reactions that are sitting there for lifetimes accumulated that make you take on, you know, it's because why do we get born in a particular body as opposed to another body? How does all that decide? It's based on this accumulated stock of reactions to pious and sinful deeds from the chain of previous lifetime. Why do we even get the intention to do some other deed now? It's influenced by our previous deeds. Hare Krishna, welcome. Good to see you. Yeah, Hare Krishna. So let's see. 9 o'clock, we should sing a song, and we were thinking that we're going to sing a different song because there's so many songs in the songbook. This morning I was singing one song and Shraddha was not familiar with it already. But